We just talked with Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison about the legalities of voting and voting by mail this election season during this pandemic. We're going to continue this conversation about government with Mr. Jeff Foster. Mm-hmm. He's got a new book out from Scholastic, For Which We Stand, How Our Government Works and Why It Matters. He's the AP Government and Politics teacher at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. After the tragedy that occurred at his school in February of 2018, many students credited Mr. Foster with giving them the tools that inspired the Never Again movement and on the March for Our Lives. Mr. Foster joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning. It's actually 9:40 here. When you said 8:40, I had to look at the clock real quick.
Oh, okay. Time is it? Well, thanks so much for being...
I thought I was missing a class or something for a moment.
Well, thanks so much for taking time in your school day to talk with us today. And I wonder if we can start with your school. Let's go back to what must have been one of the worst days you've ever experienced with the shootings at your school. Students took up that rallying cry and knew how to work within government. Tell us a little bit about it and what you saw in them around that time.
Yeah, you can imagine that day was just, the whole month was just a big haze. But the fact that my students I get a lot of credit for helping the kids along the way, but there are obviously countless teachers and adults in their lives that have helped them along their path. But within 24 hours, they got together, they organized at Cameron Caskey's house, and some of the characters I'm sure you guys are familiar with, from David Hogg to Emma Gonzalez, who actually is mentioned in that song you played me in on there by the Chicks. Hmm. They got together, and like you said, they used the lessons that I taught them on how to use the government to their advantage. And within days, we were in Tallahassee, our capital, talking to state representatives. And within, a week, we were in Washington, D.C. Then obviously, 1 month and 10 days after the event, we were marching in Washington and, had over 1 million people nationwide marching along with us. So it's weird to say, it was an incredible experience, because obviously we all wish that we wouldn't have had to go through any of that experience with the trauma that we suffered. But it was impressive to see kids galvanize that quick, organize that quick. And I think the main reason they were able to do it, because I'm asked this question a lot from way back when till to every day of my life, basically, how did it happen where it didn't happen maybe in Columbine or Sandy Hook? I think social media definitely had a major impact in it as well. Their ability to organize, quicker and connect with people is a lot easier today than it's ever been. And that was, the impetus to allow them to organize. But, it's they're still working. We're still working. I currently am part of a committee called a Ban Assault Weapons in Florida, and we tried to get an initiative on the ballot this year. And that's really, segueing into the book, what I'm trying to tell people and inform people of, from the youngest kids that this book is written for, from elementary to middle school all the way up to their parents, is let's not just sit idly by and allow things to be done to us. Let's take up and decide what's important to us and elect people that we hopefully can trust to do what we want them to do. And if they don't do what we want them to do, we actually hold them accountable and vote them out of office. So that's sort of the goal of this book, is to let people know, how not only the government works, but it ends with a entire section on what you can do as a citizen from, age 4 to age 84.
So you mentioned, this is John Bauer, you mentioned that it's for young kids up to high school. I'm 62 and I still don't know what the hell Electoral College is.
I just did a lesson on it literally 15 minutes before we talked here. So that's funny that you mentioned Electoral College.
Well, he needs help.
I need help. Help me.
Yeah, I mean the best way I explain Electoral College, I'll give it to you in 1 minute, John, is okay. Everybody is upset, in the last election, how did Hillary Clinton lose the election when she won by almost 3 million votes? Well, what I tell the kids and what it says in my book is, there are 51 separate elections that are going on right now. Every state in Washington, D.C. has their own election, and how you vote in Minnesota doesn't impact how I vote in Florida for the election. We each have our own separate election. Whoever wins those individual elections gets points, for lack of a better word, electoral votes. We add up those votes, and whoever gets the 270, the fastest, which unfortunately might be about a week or two after the election this year because of all the mail-in votes due to COVID, eventually becomes the president of the United States. So, when kids literally look at me with sadness in their eyes and it's not fair, it's not fair. I'm like, it is fair, because, it's not like Joe Biden or Donald Trump is ill-informed of the rules of the game. They both are aware, because if Trump wins again this time, he'll win without a popular vote mandate again. There's no question that it looks like Biden's going to win the popular vote. The only question that remains is, will Trump win the electoral vote, or will Biden win the electoral vote? And Biden has no right to say, I should have won, I won the popular vote, because it's not like he didn't understand the rules of the game ahead of time. So it's a little convoluted, it's a little confusing, but essentially we have 51 separate elections in all 50 states and in one District of Columbia, and we add them all up, and some states are worth more because they're bigger, and some states are deemed more important because they switch from year to year. I was actually looking up some of the facts on Minnesota beforehand, and I know you have a Senate race this year that's starting to get a little bit closer, correct?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
And then obviously the presidential race is leaning towards Biden right now, but I'm sure the Trump campaign would love to come in and get the 10 electoral votes from Minnesota, but I think you guys are fairly strong on the Democratic side most years. But yeah, John, I mean, that's really, I'm sorry that was a watered-down version for you, but that's essentially what it is.
But it did take you about a minute and 30 seconds. So it is not that easy. So I try
to talk fast.
I think back to when I was a young kid, like fourth grade, fifth grade, seventh grade, and some of the social books I had were just, are you kidding me? You were turned off just simply by the cover. Your book is amazing, and books don't do everything. I'd like to know what your style of teaching is, because there are some great teachers and there are teachers you hear about that are legendary for their whole lives and for a student's whole life. And it sounds like you're one of those guys, one of those teachers.
I hope I do fall into that category.
Yeah.
And I think it's reflected in the book. And I mean, I take pride in building relationships with my kids. And like you said, these textbooks that we're all sort of saddled with, because, obviously it's no different than the real world. Big corporations kind of run that industry. So we get forced to have these textbooks and school districts are forced to buy them. I wanted to create a book that was, affordable and can be used in lieu and hopefully of every textbook in the country, that is fun to read. Because I know even me teaching AP students, and you've mentioned how, great my kids are and how brilliant some of them and how much they've done before, they're 18 years old. They didn't love picking up the textbook that I have in my class either. So to give kids an option to see a book that's interactive and colorful and that they want to read as opposed to being forced to read was the goal of writing this book. And my children, selfishly, are in that age group. I have a child, I have a girl that's nine years old, my baby Luciana, and my oldest is 14, her name is Lily, and that's the age group sort of we were looking for in the book. So when they asked me to write the book, I said, this is perfect. I have two people in my house that I can run ideas off and make sure the language is correct for them and make sure that the graphs and the charts and the fun facts they like. And they were pretty tough critics, but they seem to like the book. So at least I have two people on my side when it comes to accepting the book at this point.
The book is called For Which We Stand, How Our Government Works and Why It Matters, put out by Scholastic Books. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about voting and voter suppression. You've got some information in there about the history of it and also what is happening today.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on. I try to purposefully in the book and in my class, I don't want anybody to really know what I, stand for directly when I'm teaching, because it's not my job to influence kids. It's to inform kids. And it's the same with the book. I don't want you walking out of here and being like, yay, I don't want you to know the options you have. But there's no question that, the current administration and some of the governors in the states are taking steps to try to, limit people's ability to vote. And the president coming out and stating, out loud that mail is a chance for fraud with mail-in ballots, when the FBI has pretty much definitively said that, I mean, are we going to have a perfect election with no attempts at fraud? Of course, that's impossible. But I think the mechanisms are in place to allow us to vote in this very strange COVID time. But we have to do a better job of making sure precincts are open. We have to make sure that people are allowed to vote whenever they want to vote. And I think that's one of the best things about America the last 20 or 30 years is all these states that have gone to early voting and all these states that have gone to, there should be an argument for compulsory, voting registration too. When you turn 18, we should just automatically register your vote, as opposed to, I work at a really good high school, and obviously myself and my department, we care about this stuff. So we register 600-700 kids a year at our school because we're a fairly large school, where other schools in our community that aren't as well off as we are, maybe minority communities, but I see the numbers, they register 3 or 4 kids during the year. So that's, yeah, definitely a problem that exists still, and we have to do everything in our power at the local, state, and federal government, and even within schools to make sure that we can rectify the situation.
You know, you said you're there to educate and give people information. What happens when you get hit, and unbiased, what happens when you get hit with a hard question from a student?
It's a great question. I try to present both sides. We do a lot of Socratic discussion in class, and I think that's one of the reasons that the kids did credit me. We have a great drama program at our school. We have a great television program at our school. I'd like to think we have a great government program at our school as well. And we try to show kids there are multiple sides to each story. And when we're talking about a difficult topic, whatever it might be, I mean, we were talking about Black Lives Matter for the last, 2.5 years of my class during the Socratic discussions. And obviously it's a little more sensitive right now with what happened this summer. But, as they speak, and I like to invite my principal up that day so she can sort of see, how bright my kids are and hopefully how brilliant of a teacher I am as well. A little ancillary benefit of that. But no, you sit back, you allow them to talk, you set the rules, and then you sort of chime in when you chime in. And I have some opinions on things that I will voice, but I will always preface it by saying, I don't want this to influence your thoughts at all, but have you, we were just talking this morning, I'll give you a really quick example. We were talking about the president being the morale builder of the country, and I spoke of George W. Bush and how he really struck a good chord after 9/11. And then I segued into today's times, and I said, I know we have some Trump voters in the audience and some Biden supporters, and, I was talking to my kids, we're in virtual school right now. And I said, but I think I can say pretty definitively that President Trump hasn't received an A on the scorecard for his ability to soothe the nation or be the shoulder to cry on. And obviously it's easy for me to speak to it because of the event that happened at our school. He never visited our school after February 14th. And, I don't begrudge him for that, but I just feel like if someone else were in office, any of the previous and maybe subsequent presidents, they would have at least come to the school, spend some time in the community. I mean, he is from, he has a home like 40 minutes from our school. So you think that would have been automatic, but because we're not necessarily a Republican bastion in South Florida, maybe he didn't choose to come here. Whereas if we were another part of Florida that was more Republican, maybe he would have spent multiple visits at our school. So I just was pointing out that, that there's certain things that the president's sort of responsible to do, and he doesn't really fit that, doesn't fill that role very well. And so I tiptoed around it, and I didn't want to, again, overtly criticize the president, but I think I made my point, and I think the kids that, support Trump or don't support Trump just sort of, agreed, and we talked about it for a few minutes. But that's, the best way you can do it. You can just present a side and just, If I feel like we're going way too much on one side, I will absolutely offer the other side of every argument just so they can see that other arguments exist. And the most important part about it is, John, is that, they understand that we can talk about things without shouting over each other.
Yeah.
Sounds like they are good role models for adults in the way things are going right now. Boy.
Yeah.
We could have a little bit of that. I wonder if, and now this is going to be a quick one again too, but we are also right now, besides election, besides a pandemic, there is a Supreme Court nomination.
Yes.
And hearings going on. Talk about the importance of having the checks and balance system that we have in this country.
I mean, it's extremely important, but as we can see, if one party controls, especially the confirmation hearings, there's nothing the other party can really do. And obviously both sides look sort of hypocritical right now because what happened in 16, when President Obama appointed Merrick Garland and the Republicans, obviously decided not to give him an up or down vote. And then the Democrats said, this is, ridiculous. The Republicans say we shouldn't do it. And now both have exact opposite stances 4 years later. It really speaks to what Andrew Jackson, lived back in the 1820s when he said to the victor go the spoils. And It's tough to watch, but I had a conversation on Facebook with a bunch of my former students about this last night. It's legal what they're doing, and this court packing thing that's coming up right now, if Biden gets elected, it's a little alarming to me because I don't think that the president should be just arbitrarily adding 2 or 4 or 6 justices just because they don't have their ideology on the court. But again, I guess we're all going to see what happens here in the next 2 to 3 months. But it's important to have the checks and balances. Unfortunately, Congress has ceded some of that power over the year, like in terms of war making powers and the ability of the president to commit troops, because they're just sort of afraid to be blamed for anything. And because of that, as we see, the president gets lauded for stuff and he gets criticized for stuff a lot more than probably he deserves to do that. But, you know, again, the founding fathers had an idea in place when they wrote the Constitution. And most of the time we follow those ideals and they work. But in modern times, it's been really difficult just because of the rancor that exists in this country right now. And if you're not on my side, you're on the other team. And it's really getting bad. We saw it bubble up this summer. I mean, in your state, I mean, it's tough to watch from the outside, and it's tough to watch from the inside as well.
So I think we should end with your motto: if you don't participate, you can't complain.
Yes. That's it. No matter how old you are. I mean, it's tough. You know, you feel like you're beating your head against the wall sometimes in this country, and like no one's working on your behalf. But it doesn't mean you should quit. You should keep fighting. You should keep standing up for what you believe in. And hopefully civility will rule in the end, and we can finally start getting back to actually compromising with each other as opposed to just fighting each other all the time.
Thanks, Mr. Rogers.
It's Mr. Jeff Foster.
I just put on my sweater. Thank you.
His new book is For Which We Stand, How Our Government Works and Why It Matters. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Good men to get together with one another. We got on our